The first confirmed sighting of rare North Atlantic right whales in Cape Cod Bay was recorded on Wednesday, December 12th by staff at the Provincetown Center for Coastal Studies. This sighting begins the 2013 season for the researchers at the center. North Atlantic right whales are among the rarest of the baleen whale species, with a population of about 500. Cape Cod Bay is a rich feeding ground for these massive animals. Since 1984, the center has studied right whales and their use of the bay. Mariners are prohibited by state and federal laws from approaching within 500 yards of a right whale without a federal permit. The center is the only organization on the East Coast federally authorized to disentangle large free-swimming whales. Today, we revisit a trip we made in the spring of 2008. We had the opportunity to join senior scientist Charles Stormy Mayo aboard the Shearwater to get a closer look at their research and the right whale.
It's one of the rarest on Earth, which is, you know, it's one of the really rare mammals on Earth. So, and it's right here in near shore waters of Cape Cod. Something that a lot of people here don't realize. I've often said I get home and I look at Animal Planet on TV or National Geographic, and I'm thinking, wow, look at those rare animals. Meanwhile, right outside our door here is one of the rarest, rarer than most of the big cats, maybe all of them. And this is where it makes a living, so it's pretty neat.
We have, what, about 300 left?
The estimates, it's never possible to get a precise look, although the people who do that work and we contribute to the information are looking at probably 350 animals, maybe a few more, maybe a few less, hard to say.
Do we know, when you look at the female population of the right whales, where is that number where they couldn't rebound, that they would be leading to extinction? Do we know that?
Yeah, I don't think we've got that. There are some guesses, and the belief is right now that everything, of course, hangs on the females. But at present, the feeling is, and it seems to be supported, that there are enough, if we don't keep killing them off, to make it back. But we've had an unusual mortality from ship strikes and entanglement in females, so it's tough. It's a tough one.
So every female that you save from entanglement is critical?
Critical, because that may produce 15 calves in its lifetime, perhaps. So you save one, you save 15, and that's pretty important.
How did you get started in this?
The dolphin fleet. So I went as naturalist on the dolphin fleet for years, many years. Got to know a lot of people, and the center kind of grew up around that.
And you actually invented the technique for disentangling the whales, right?
Dave Matilla and I were the first two who worked on free-swimming whales. There had been efforts, and important ones, in Canada to try to cut whales that were anchored and just lying there with gear all over them. And those efforts by John Lean were very well known. But not many people were actually going to see and trying to stop free-swimming whales, which are the tough ones, because you haven't got them there. They're not broken. They're not happy with you, and they have control as opposed to a whale that's anchored and not capable of moving. So Dave and I'd like to say we thought a lot and evolved it. Actually, it just happened like a lot of fishing operations. You do it because it works, and it worked. And it's now used. The techniques, which are pretty straightforward, are used worldwide.
I don't think people realize how dangerous it is, because these whales don't know that you're trying to help them.
No, they certainly... right whales in particular, the ones I hope we'll see today, are... I've worked on a lot of whales over the many years. All of the species that are located here, right whales are a different category. None of them are safe, and no one should deal with them when they're in that position unless they know what they're doing. And it requires a federal permit. General public can't deal with them. The right whale that I hope we'll see, that looks so odd and slow-moving, is very talented and very obstinate.
I'm sure you're not... the irony here that your... Was it your great-grandfather was a whale hunter, and here you are a whale
Actually, my father... I have a photo from the Provincetown Advocate of my father in the 30s with pilot whales. He hunted pilot whales. Probably one of the last people around here actually hunted anything called a whale. But way back, my family that did mostly netting of mackerel back in the 1700s, 1800s, doubtless occasionally, like netters did, took right whales. So the ancestors of these animals were taken by my ancestors.
Kind of neat.
Kind of neat that it's kind of come full circle.
Well, the neat part is I get to pay him back a little, because certainly what my family did, it wasn't very extensive, but it's pretty obvious they took them when they had a chance. And one can imagine that some of these animals barely made it through because maybe my ancestors weren't as good shots and their mothers lived. So it's an interesting thing to be saving them now that my family once killed them.
I'll just last question here before we
I just want to
ask you about the funding. Is the funding for the program for disentangling the whales, are you having some funding issues?
I think right now there is a funding problem in all of the environmental agencies in the government, and no surprise that right whales are part of that story. The situation in Cape Cod Bay, for instance, where most of our work is done, is, I won't say in jeopardy, and I'm talking about the general funding. The kind of thing we're going to be doing today, the federal agencies need as much support as they can. They're trying to help. And certainly a large part of what goes on is due to federal agencies supporting state agencies, the Division of Marine Fisheries in our case, trying to support the effort to protect the animals that are here in Cape Cod Bay. And all of that, I think just one can assume, is in question, and the public needs to understand what they're getting for their money. Obviously, the federal government's got probably bigger problems than we realize. The disentanglement, which happens here, in fact, throughout the East Coast, is also severely under financial pressure. So we're not going to go directly to where we believe the whales are, though we may find some. We're going to go across to the west side of the bay. Our effort in our project, the Division of Marine Fisheries project that we work with, is multifaceted, and you'll see both facets. One is an air survey, and the airplane is up today. So there'll be part of our crew is from the center is going to be in an odd-looking survey aircraft, and they will be zigzagging along strict lines across the bay. And people on Cape Cod doubtless have looked up at this thing and said, "What's that funny-sounding, weird-looking airplane?" That's our survey aircraft. They'll go back and forth, and meanwhile, we're going to go across and go down a set of stations, locations, where we will take food samples. And from the food samples, our operation is to predict where the whales that the aircraft sees are likely to go. Are they going to move into shipping lanes? They're going to be very close to them today. Places where they could be struck by ships. Are they going to move into locations far to the west where there may be fishing activity? So we look at food, work close to animals, try to identify what they're eating, understand what the distribution of their plankton food is. And so we'll be looking at a lot of plankton, an odd thing. We're working with such a big creature, looking under microscopes to understand them, looking at plankton. So that's the game. So we'll go down across and down the west side of the bay. You'll see the Plymouth Shore. And then we will enter the area probably after the second station we take. We're going to enter the area where the whales are likely going to be.
So Did she say we've seen a right whale already?
Yeah. We have a lot of them here, so I was hoping we'd get down to the mother load, but it looks like we got some here. So we're going to have to take a look at them and see what comes.
Mark, we also have at least, or Stormia, Mark, we have at least one whale at 3 o'clock, probably a quarter mile off.
3 o'clock. Okay, we'll stay on them and actually try to get good shots because I don't know if the plane is even going to get up this way. But as soon as that's done, we're going to have to take some samples. The animals are skimming, which means they're feeding right on the surface. It looks like sort of a social feeding group. A couple of whales, maybe even more. But you'll see them with their heads out of water. They open their mouths and basically act like plankton nets, driving their mouth through the water and trapping the plankton on the inner surface. So they're just under the surface here. You can see they're working probably a layer that's just beneath the surface. There's one up.
How far away do you stay from them?
Well, we don't usually get too much closer than this.
This is pretty close.
Yeah. Well, we can do this under a federal permit, and obviously we have a pretty good idea of what we're doing. The game is to try to get ID photographs right now. So Sarah is going to be photographing the animals, the roughened skin patches on the surface of the head. And then as soon as that's done, we'll probably be working right behind them, trying to take nettoes to understand a little better what they're eating here. You can see, though, we're right close to the land. Provincetown is...
Okay, how far offshore do you think we are?
We're about a mile off the beach. And these animals are quite capable of coming right up on the in 6 or 8 feet of water where people in the summer swim.
Wow!
No one's swimming this time of year, of course. But it's likely to happen. Might happen today because these layers of plankton seem to like to move up right against the harbor.
So this would be why you can walk along the beach in Provincetown
right.
And actually get a
right.
good view of them.
Right. We can. We can get right up next to them sometimes on the beach. We're going to probably hang off and try to get these photographs before we move in closer. You can see they're up and down, which is a sign they're probably working a layer that's of modest depth. And so they're sometimes following it to the surface and they're sometimes underneath. These guys will not be lifting their tails very often because they're working... a layer. We're going to probe the layer and find out what it is they're working on.
You often don't have water this calm when you're out, is that
right?
No. So this is a good day for you then.
This is exceptional. There's a finback over there. See that?
Yeah.
Fin whale.
Okay. This will be 8 meters. Ready?
Yeah, we're going.
And go.
Station A.
Can you tell us what you're doing as you're doing that?
Yes, I'm just labeling the jars that we'll be putting our samples in. So we'll sample a vertical stretch of the water column so that we can see exactly how thick the plankton layer is that these whales are feeding on. And so we're going to pump all that water through the hose and filter out the plankton that the whales are eating. And then put those samples into these jars so later we can identify the taxa and in some cases the age class of the plankton they're eating.
And the instrument that you have over the side there down there, that takes data as well, and then do you compare the two? Is that what happens?
Oh, yeah. So attached to the hose, yes, we have a CTD which measures conductivity, temperature, and CT density. And then we also have a light meter on there. So we're hoping to collect physical environmental data to look at how that's affecting the distribution of plankton and how, in turn, that distribution of plankton is affecting the whale's behavior and their distribution.
No, soon as we get done with this, we'll go across on our what we were already anticipating. We didn't expect to be... We may bump into whales, not literally, but figuratively, all the way across. There may be quite a load here. Remarkable concentration from what they've described.
So, Stormy, tell us what you're doing with the computer.
We've got a program that we've written to take data from many different sources. It's receiving information from GPS and, in a very real sense, from the satellites that are over us, give us a precise location. We have information coming in from sensors underneath the boat as to the speed of the boat, the water temperature, information on the course of the vessel. And at the same time, we're putting in data that's coming in from the samplers here. And on the sampling unit, we have what's called a CTD. It's a unit that will take information on salinity, temperature, depth, with a great deal of precision. Also information on chlorophyll, which relates to the plankton in the water, the green color that we see here. And then with the pump, we're collecting information on the density of the food resource. So we're looking at a lot of different things at the same time. Now we're taking a plankton tow with a bigger net and much more volume of water, so there'll be a lot of material should be dense with food, the food these whales are feeding on. The nets are using a mesh which we've determined mimics the mesh of the filtering mechanism in the mouth of the right whale. So what we see is approximately what a right whale would get if it was feeding here. And you'll see, should see a fairly thick slurry of brownish-orange organisms, very high in caloric value. It'll come in about 5 minutes. The tow will be 5 minutes long. And as soon as that's done, we're going to go across the bay to the other side where the concentrations are.
So this sample we took at a depth of 1 meter, and that's pretty much where we saw the whales feeding. So they were skim feeding and just subsurface feeding, and you can see all the individual organisms in there. And those are pretty large. I mean, those would be considered large zooplankton. And then, so that was at 1 meter, and then just at 4 meters, so 3 meters lower, you know, you have nothing. So you can see that the zooplankton layer was really compressed up at the surface, and that's what you tend to expect when you see whales skim feeding like that. Ready, Stormy?
Yeah.
1-1-4-4-7-1.
Well, they're in the area.
Confirm you have 2645, EG 3530, and a third animal that's in poor health. What's your location?
Roger that. We have 2645, 3530, and another animal that's very gray and in poor health, but with no visible rope. Stand by for location.
The ultimate conversation on among us as to who's who, all these whales being identifiable, is using a numbering system that the catalog center at New England Aquarium applies to them. So often you'll hear numbers being exchanged. The whales we've got right now are the survey aircraft is seeing whale 2645. And a second one, 3530. Those are the numbers, basically the names of those individuals. So they're able, we have very trained people in the aircraft, and they can look down at the animals, see the pattern of marking, and identify who they are. So that's what they're reporting to us, plus a third whale that looks sick. So this is very much today an example that we unfortunately get too often of the plight of the animals. Not only are we seeing successfully feeding ones that look pretty healthy, but now we hear from the aircraft that not very far south of us there are at least three whales that are in trouble. And that's obviously one of the reasons we're so worried about the population.
Is it unusual to find two at a time like this that are entangled?
This is kind of a natural fishbowl, and I think the reason we're seeing that it's probably chance. These are not whales that were, to our knowledge, entangled around here. They've been identified here and there all along the coast. So it's not that it's something that's happened here, but they drift into this area, and that's chance. But with so many whales around, you're going to run into the black marble in the bottle of white marbles, and that's what we got now.
Photographing whales here for a little while anyway, so head on over and give us a chat when you get here.
Stormy, tell us again what we're seeing here.
It's an unusually tight aggregation of whales. They're all on long dives, so I think that's a sign that they're feeding right against the bottom. That's what we're going to be sampling for. We're going to see if we can find the food with our vertical sampling system. I guess it's hard to know how many. It's tails in the air, and the whale's headed straight down. They come up for a few breaths, and then they're down again, which is usually a sign of feeding.
And we should mention, we're just off of Sandwich. Again, not that far off from shore.
Right. Yeah, I would imagine we're about four miles off the beach. And we've got about 90 feet of water beneath us right here.
And this is unusual because there are so many. You don't usually see this many feeding like this anywhere
right.
in the world, right?
Well, yeah, for this species, this is a rare view. We got the land right behind them, and I imagine we may have 15, perhaps more, right whales right in a close pack here. Normally they're spread out a lot more, but in this situation, they're all working hard. You can see the dives are very powerful. They're really driving hard to get to the bottom. They've only got 90 feet of water under them, so they're diving only three body lengths, but they're looking to get right against the bottom, I think.
And then just tell us about the spout.
Yeah, these whales, if you notice...
Just did it.
Yeah, there's one right... Yeah, and a tail in the air. These animals, the right whales, have a V-spout, and it was really one of the reasons that they were easily caught. People on this very shore could look off. If they saw the V-spout, they knew it was the really valuable whale, the right whale. And, of course, there was a lot of hunting that went on in Cape Cod Bay, probably as much because shore sighters could tell that they had the valuable whale there, and they'd launch their boats. And it isn't very far, you can see. This is a view from the old days, although then maybe there were a lot more whales. But for now, this is pretty exciting to have this many right whales in close to the land. Talk about gluttony. we're looking at probably between 100 and 200 pounds of food an hour. And these animals, except for those breaks in these active groups on the surface, they may be feeding for 18 to 20 hours a day. So they're packing it in, and the stuff is richer than almost anything we normally eat. It's very oil rich and very high calorically.
Also on this trip, Erin Burke from the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. She's a protected species biologist. Erin, tell us what your role in this trip is. What are you doing? What are you researching?
I manage the protected species programs for the state, and that includes a lot of right whale research, which is why I'm here today. The right whale surveillance program in the Bay is sort of the cornerstone of our program, and we do a lot of
WhaleSafe gear research and acoustic monitoring of the right whales. And then we also work on sea turtle entanglement issues. But it's the program mainly looks at right whales and sea turtles at this point.
And today we're very lucky. We got to see quite a few right whales.
Yep. There's a lot in the bay right now. It's pretty typical for this time of year.
Stormy, tell us the importance of the Division of Marine Fisheries to what you're doing.
All the work that we do in Cape Cod Bay is supported through really a conduit of funding that comes to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and then is used by the Commonwealth through the Division of Marine Fisheries to work on several major efforts, including, of course, the one in Cape Cod Bay for the rare right whale. I think we can call it a collaborative between the Division of Marine Fisheries, the federal agency, which is the National Marine Fisheries Service, and our project, which works out of here. So it takes a lot of different people and a fair amount of funding, but we think we've probably made a better chance for right whales, and that's what we're all about.
Part of what you're doing today with this assessment is you were looking. We saw some whales that were feeding towards the surface. We saw some that were diving down. And what you're doing is trying to determine where in the water column they're feeding. Is that right?
Right, yes. One of the concerns, well, it's perhaps one of the two great concerns about right whales relates to their entanglement in fishing gear. And that appears to happen far too often when they're feeding. And as you saw today, they were feeding both at the surface and on long dives, tails in the air. So we're really quite interested in where it is that they're feeding. That, of course, is where the food, the layer of food is. And the layer goes up and down in the water column. And so today we were once again trying to understand the dynamic between how that layer forms, where it forms, and ultimately where fishing gear is set. So it's quite much a conservation effort, as all that we do in the bay is. It ultimately is conservation.
Now, there was a time when you yourself used to do all the disentanglements, and now you have a staff, right?
Right. Now we have a separate trained disentanglement team. I'm still the senior advisor, and I will likely be doing some of it, but thank God we've got more than just me. It's been 20 years of working with whales at close quarters, so it's nice to just look at them from a distance.
As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, it's against the law to get closer than 500 yards to the right whale. So where can you get the best glimpse? Stormy says you can get an amazing view of the feeding whales by walking the Provincetown beaches from Race Point to Wood End. Thanks to Stormy Mayo and his crew, Captain Mark Costa, Associate Scientist David Osterberg, Research Assistant Karen Stamieskin, Research Intern Sarah Fortune, and Protected Species Biologist Aaron Burke with the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. Also thanks to Producer Brian Morris. I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.